I'm one of the people, I just, if I'm gonna do something, I just do it. So, of course, I didn't read all the details. I get there, it's in the woods. I'm a city girl. I'm like, wait a minute, I gotta go in there. And they're like, yeah, the race is in there. I'm like, but there's snakes and stuff in there.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. I'm an ultra runner and a mindset coach. When trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where the conversation will go. So if you're ready, let's get started. Welcome to the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. My guest this week is Jameela Abdul-Rahim Mujahid. She is, I ran across her on Facebook because, and she caught my attention because she has a goal to set a world record, Guinness World Record, for the most ultramarathons run within a year.
In
1 year. Okay. Okay. So welcome to the show, Jameela. I'm glad we had some technical difficulties before, so I appreciate you hanging in there.
Right. Okay.
I always try to start off, and I know we want to, I want to get to talking about, you know, your whole thing of the ultramarathons that you're running and all of that, but I want to start off kind of talk about how did you get started running? When was your start?
You know what, to be honest with you, and this is as I remember, it was really, I was at a track meet in Georgia, and I was running the 400, and then I ran the 200, and after the 200, I pulled my hamstring. So in the midst of doing that, I was doing a water therapy to get my leg back going. And what I did is I had this bucket, and I was like pulling it back and forth through the pool and stuff like that. And so this guy goes, he was like, oh, are you getting ready for one of those long races? And I was like, no, I'm a sprinter. You know, I'm doing therapy, yada, yada, we got to talk and whatever. So he was like, well, there's this marathon coming up. And he was like, it's going to be a lot of the long distance people there. And I was like, okay, so I'm thinking marathon is, that's the long distance as far as I know, you know? Mm-hmm. So I went to Callaway Gardens, fast forward, you know, I went to Callaway Gardens, did the marathon and everything like that. And after the marathon, I met this woman named Vakina, and Ron Clay is who actually introduced me to her. These are all runners in Georgia. And he was like, yeah, she's one of the long distance runners. And I was like, what was that we just ran? You know, because that was like, to me, that was long distance. You're talking to a sprinter. So that was like about to kill me. So anyways, you know, we got to talking and whatever. And she's like, yeah, there's 50 milers and 100 milers. And she's like, I've ran 6 day races. I'm like, who? You did what? People run that long for, you know, why, where, you know, all this and that. So then she got me the information. And from that, I connected, what do I want to call it? I can't even think of it right now. Ultra Running Calendar. And okay. I saw all these races and I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. You know, people really do this. So I signed up for my first race, which was in North Carolina. It was called Triple Threat. It was a 40 miler. I'm one of the people, I just, if I'm gonna do something, I just do it. So of course I didn't read all the details. I get there, it's in the woods. I'm a city girl. I'm like, wait a minute, I gotta go in there. And they're like, yeah, the race is in there. I'm like, but there's snakes and stuff in there. So, you know, fast forward. So I wind up doing the race. I had no clue how long 40 miles was going to take me. You know, like I said, I'm coming from a background where, you know, you finish your race in minutes. Okay. So, mm-hmm. And that marathon took me like 4 hours. And that was like too long to me. That was a long time. So anyway, did the race. I was there like almost 9 hours. And I had just had a baby. Well, not just had him. Mustafa was like 7 months old. And I was nursing him. And again, so I had no clue how this day was going to turn out. You know, I didn't pump any bottles or anything. So, you know, he's there. I'm nursing him, going back to the race, you know, And I know people were looking at me like, what is this woman doing? But I had no clue. I didn't bring any, you know, I brought like, I think 2 bottles of water, and I brought snacks and stuff for the kids, because I had all the kids with me. And that was it. I didn't know I was going to need, you know, stuff too. But like, everybody had their own little select whatever to get them through the race. And I didn't have any of that. I just was like, you know, okay, I got to get back to that side, because that's where the kids are. So it was tough. It was tough, I must admit. But the fact that I did it, I believe, is what kind of, you know, like, man, I did that, you know, afterthought. And that was like the furthest I had ever ran in my life. So then immediately I was like, I'll never do that again. Never do that again. Got home. I want to say no more than 24 hours. I was already signing up for my next race. And that was North Coast 24, a 24 hour race.
24 hours. Uh-huh. Wow. Was that a trail race as well?
North Coast is in Ohio. It's in Edgewater Park. So it was more familiar territory. It's all asphalt, and you run around a lake for 24 hours. So,
okay.
And that put me at 79 miles, 75, 79. I can't really remember, but I know it was 70 something. And I was like, wow. Yeah. I can actually do this, you know? So that's what kind of, I don't know. I've just been doing them ever since.
Well, that's pretty good. So when you were there, aid stations, your first trail race, you had no water. Were there aid stations out there?
There was one aid station. There was one aid station. And it was centered, I want to say, like at mile, anywhere between like mile 8. I think it was like mile 8. But you had to pass that same section. You know, you went through that section more than one time. So that's why that one aid station was set there. I guess it was like right in the middle, because I remember kept going past there. But, you know, I didn't know anything about doing a drop bag, because people had drop bags, you know, at different spots throughout the trail. You know, this, it would have a sign saying drop bags here, but I didn't bring a drop bag because I didn't know, you know, like I said, when you're doing a marathon, they have the little tables and you stop and get your food, you know, whatever, get your water. So I didn't bring any drop bags. So it was like, That aid station was my life, you know. By the time I got to the aid station, I would sit down, drink, and eat and everything. So, yeah, I had no clue.
But you made it. That's still pretty good. So how long was it between your first marathon and your 40-mile race?
The marathon, I want to say, I think it was like anywhere between 2 weeks time frame between the two.
Oh my goodness. So you finished your marathon and 2 weeks later you ran.
Yeah. She had gave me the information. So I signed right up for it. And that's how I am. If somebody tells me something, I'm gonna go ahead and do it. Cause otherwise I'll kind of think about it and not do it. But if I don't think about it, I'll do it. You know, cause then when I'm already in it, it's like, hey, you here, you got to go ahead and finish it. And that's what I tell people. I say, everything I do, I don't think about it. Cause if I think about it, I think I'll get tired. You know, but I don't think about it. I just kind of go through the motions and get it done. I do not think about it. That's why people be like, well, what do you have planned for this? I don't know. I go week to week. I don't think about all that. I'm not there yet. So I can't, you know, a lot of times if I think about too much stuff, it gets overwhelming. So I don't think about it.
That's, you know, that's almost like a superpower. The people, I mean, so many people, I mean, I know it's just, and you probably know people like this too. You know, they're always worried about what's going to happen. They're thinking about the future and worried about the future, and, or they think about the past.
Right.
Know, it's really hard to think about what am I doing right now.
Yeah. I can't, you know, I'm a, I put it out there into the universe and I let it go. I really do. I let it go. I don't overthink anything. I don't. Because I'm telling you, it'd take me to a whole nother place. And I'm like, no, I'm not going there. We're not doing that. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So do you do the same thing when you're running in a race?
I do. When I'm running a race, I go, I either do, depending on what the race is, in the terrain, I'll either do 3 miles or 5 miles. You know, knock those 3 miles out. Let's go, girl. You do another three. Knock those 3 miles out. Or either I'll say, okay, let's do 5 miles. Yes, I made my 5 mile goal. Okay, you can do five more miles, you know. I never say I got 100 miles to do. Never. I've never once did that. I've always been 5 miles. The most I've ever done, I know at Ball State, I set everything at 10 miles. I was doing it in 10 miles, okay. Knocking out 10 miles. Okay, you could do 10 more miles. Come on. What did you have to do to get through those 10 miles? Do 10 more, 10 more. You know, but I've never, I can't. I mean, I know people be like, well, I'm going to do 50 miles in this time. I can't. I have to do small little, you know, chop off small little pieces. Those are my little celebrations, you know. Mm-hmm.
So you said you celebrate like when you,
oh, yeah.
When you finish.
Oh, yeah. It's a party. That's when I'm dancing. That's when I'm like, okay, pumping myself up. And I rarely wear a watch. And like I got this Fitbit. I have a Garmin, all that stuff. And it literally just tells me the time of day. But as far as what pace I'm on, I have no clue. I don't want to know. Mm-hmm. And I guess that's from years of track. You know, my coach was like, okay, you got to do this faster. Go faster. And that used to stress me out. So now when I run, I just run. You know what I mean? And I'll know my time at the end. Or either I'll know, like lately I've been doing races where I have to follow cutoffs. So I have to figure out, okay, I got to be there by this time. I don't know how fast it takes me to get to that time. I just know I need to be there before this time is up. That's how I do mine. Okay. I don't do pacing. And I don't know if that's good or bad, but I don't know. That's never been a thing for me to say, okay, I can run a 7 minute mile or I run 12 minutes. Or I don't do that. I have to know. If you say I got to be there by 10 o'clock, I'm going to be there by 10 o'clock. That's what I have to do in order to, you know, make the cutoff. And that's what kind of, like I said, my watch is a regular watch. I don't set it based on heart rate or none of that. I just use the time. I half the watches I have on, I don't even know how to work them other than what time is it. I can tell you what time it is. I can't tell you my heart rate. Can't tell you what pace is going. None of that, you know, but that's just how I do mine. That's me.
Yeah. You don't have you say you don't like, you just have the time. How do you know how far you've gone? I mean, when you said,
I don't know how far I am until I actually ask them. Well, what about?
Okay.
I don't know. I'm telling the honest truth. I have no clue. And I think, like I said, I think for me, if I was to say 20 miles is long for me, that's exhausting. It's exhausting. So I don't do it like that. I have to do little stuff. Cause I mean, to me, I could bust out 5 miles with my eyes closed. I could do that. I set small goals. So let's say if something is a 20 mile loop, I don't know. I'm just going to keep going until I finish that loop. And that's how I know I did 20 miles. Cause you told me it was 20 miles. I won't know that. I'll just keep going. Now I will know, okay, hey, all right, an hour has passed, 2 hours has passed, 3 hours has passed, you know, that type of thing. Mm-hmm. But as far as in that hour, how much miles I've covered, I won't know.
Right.
I won't know until I finish, you kind of know the difference
between the aid station.
Then I'll be able to say, you know, because you've told me, okay, that was 20 miles. Once I finish, I'll be like, oh, okay, so 20 miles took me 8 hours. So now next time I go, I'll start saying, okay, you did a mile. You can get through 7 more hours. You did 3 hours, you know, that type of thing. So that's how I break my time. Is easier for me to have a concept over and master versus mileage. Mileage seems to just wear me out. It does. I can do time. I can get through anything in an hour, you know, because to me it's like, okay, I'll relate back to something. Okay, well, you know, takes you 45 minutes to get the kids to school, takes you 30 minutes to get to work. I do stuff like that in my head. And I'm like, you do that every day. So you can do an hour and a half out here. Get through it. You can. That's how I relate. I relate stuff to time. I don't do it by miles.
Okay. You know? Okay. Yeah. And so, and usually in an ultra, there's aid stations and you kind of know the miles between the aid stations. So you can, when you get there, you can like, okay, I've done that. You know, look at the next aid station that, and you can set your goals like, okay, I'm going to celebrate after 5 miles.
Right.
And so,
right. So, yeah. And what I do is like, let's say they say, okay, this aid station is 6.7 miles and I'll get there. And, you know, they may give you a card at the beginning of the race saying, okay, you got to be there by X amount of time. Mm-hmm. I'll just be looking at my watch and saying, okay, run fast. Okay, walk a little. Run fast, walk a little until I get to that aid station. And then that'll tell me how long it took me to get to that aid station. Mm-hmm. And based on that time is what I'll use throughout the rest of the race. Whatever that first section is what I calculate everything else the rest of the race.
Wow.
That's what I'll do. That's the best part for me in order to not fall behind. I calculate everything after. Whatever you tell me that first section is, everything else throughout the rest of the race is going to be based on that first section. And I'll just, what I do is I keep telling myself, all right, you can get through that again. And I do a lot of, Jeff Galloway, because I run, walk. I do a lot of run and walk. If I walk too much, for some reason, it tells my body I'm done. I get tired. So I can't do a lot of walking. And then I always run, but then in the back of my head, I'll hear Fred Davis telling me, slow down, walk before you have to, you know. It's like Bill Schultz, Ray Cade, all of them, the same thing. They'll be like, you know, I trust a walker before I trust a runner, because the runner going to get tired. But somebody who walks, if they know how to walk, they'll keep walking. So I think about people that I've known throughout the year, like John Price, he'll walk all over the place, you know? So I slow myself down and do a little walking, but then I can't walk a long time. You know what I mean? I really can't. I got to run. But I don't run to the point anymore that I tire myself out. Does that make sense? Okay.
So, yeah. So you're kind of like in your body, kind of judging. So you don't have a set time of, you know, walk so much. So you go by feel. So like when you've walked enough, there's something in your body is like, okay, if I keep this up, I'm gonna end up.
Because see,
I need to run. So
my mind will drift off.
That's good.
I got to be honest. If I do a lot of walking, I start picking up flowers. I'll be looking at the trees and I'll get lost. I really will. And then I'll lose time. It's like, wait, no, run. Come on. You take pictures later. You'll see this later. Get this done. So that's my reasoning for running. Because if I walk too much, I'm telling you, I'll start really like, oh my gosh, this is so beautiful. Oh, wow. Wow. Well, I wonder how much. Oh, look at that. I'll get lost. That's just me. My mind is just wander off. So, and now the only way I can walk and stay focused is if I'm on a track and I see other people moving. But if it's just me out on the trails, I need to run. I need to run. I do.
That's cool. So you ran a couple of ultra marathons. Well, you did a timed event and then a trail run. Where'd you go from there?
I'm sorry to interrupt you. Hang on, because I'm looking for the volume. Hang on one quick second. Is this it? Hopefully, let's say this is it. Okay, say something now. Let me see if that was the volume.
Okay, yeah.
That was.
Can you hear me?
Woo! Yay! Okay, go ahead.
That's good. So you ran your first, you know, you ran a trail race and then a timed race. So what was your next, kind of your next step in your ultra running
career? What did I do next? Oh, I did Bartram. It was a trail race that they used to have in Georgia. It was a 100-miler. And I did that because of, like, a lot of the Georgia runners were going to be there, and I knew I would have help, and I would be able to follow them on, you know, as far as, okay, we should be able to do this section, da, da, da. You know what I mean? Since I was new, mm-hmm. I was totally dependent on what they knew and following them, you know, as far as not getting lost. But this was a trail race for real. I mean, like, I had to run it at night. Okay. And I had a flashlight. I didn't know anything about headlamps back then. You know, I had a flashlight. I still wasn't prepared, you know, because I didn't know how long it was going to be. This took me 31 hours. And I had, you know, had never been in a race that long, you know, so mm-hmm. I wasn't prepared. I was definitely super scared of the dark, super, super scared of the dark being out there. In a 100-miler, you don't stay together unless you got a pacer or something like that. But once everybody kind of gets into their paces and grooves or whatever, you basically by yourself, you know.
Mm-hmm. In the dark, you're by yourself.
Yeah, so I was
and like, in the woods.
Okay, I did a lot of praying to get me through. I have no clue to this day how I survived that 100-miler. I don't. I'm just like, I know I was going through it. I really was. I was going through it because I was so scared. I was so scared being out there by myself. I wasn't so concerned with finishing. You know, that wasn't my concern was surviving, you know, because at night, this was my first time at night in the woods, hearing all these noises. I started seeing things because, you know, after the race, they was like, no, that's not out there, Jamila. You were seeing things. So, what you say, there was a werewolf out there. There was a werewolf out there. They didn't believe me, but I don't care. I know what I saw. And I'm sticking to it. That's my story. But yeah.
A friend of mine saw monkeys.
You know, I'm serious. It's funny how in the daytime, something looks one way, but at night, it becomes a creature. Mm-hmm. You know, all the trees were bears. And yeah. I can't even remember, like I said, with Bartram, was we in Carrollton County? I can't even remember where we were, but wherever we were, there were no bears in that woods that they told me after the fact. But to me, those trees were bears, you know. Mm-hmm. The little stumps turned into little bears sitting there looking at me. I saw all kinds of eyes. So they said they were raccoons or things like that, but I don't care. I know there were werewolves looking at me. There was a pack of werewolves, and I was not having it. So, but I did wind up finishing. It was like probably 30 seconds left on the clock when I came running through. But yeah, that was something. That was something. Yeah. And literally, that was like, because I didn't even give myself time to think about it. I think after Norcos, I did that one maybe like a week and a half later or a week later or something. Yeah.
After your 24 hour. Uh-huh. Okay.
I signed right back up. I did. I signed up.
So did you ever get to the end of that race and say, okay, that's it. I'm done. Mm-mm. I'm not doing this again.
Excuse me. It seemed like the more I did them, the more I was drawn to figuring out how I could be better at it. Because for me, mentally, coming from always finishing, you know, either first place, second place, you know, always getting a national championship, going to, you know, all kinds of games, representing our team, you know, coming from that background to last. Wait a minute, me? Last? What do you mean I didn't make the time? No, no.
And you were close to have DNF, right? You said you were a few seconds away from.
Are you serious? I did not make the time. This is not me. So the more that kept happening to me, I was determined to master this ultra marathons. You know, I was like, no, I know I can do this. And it was difficult for me too. Because I would, and I know this is crazy, but as of right now, it seems like I'm just getting started, because now I don't have all of the obstacles I had all these years. As far as immediately finishing a race, got to get back home. You know, I got to get the kids' school clothes ready, got to wash clothes, got to cook for the week. You know, I got to get right back up, take them to school, from school, got to go to work. All of those things are gone now. But in the beginning, they were there. And I attributed, and I can say that now, I attributed that to, that's my weakness. But the reality was, I was just too tired. I would be so tired. It had nothing to do with the kids. Now, if I had, now let's say if this was something I probably had been doing all along, maybe I would have been able to figure out a formula to attend to the kids correctly and still train. There was no time for training. It was always, my training came from me teaching classes, because I was a full-time instructor. You know, I worked in the gym full-time and I waitressed full-time. So, but I was a stickler about my kids. You know what I mean? I never ever, because I didn't have that. I didn't have to ever worry about mom or dad, you know, not being there. So I never, I had promised myself that when I had kids, that my kids would never be able to say nothing about their mom not being there. So with that aspect of always being attentive to them, I never trained. I didn't have time, you know, because by the time I'll get done with whatever they needed, it was time to go to bed. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so then next thing I know, it's race day. So, my racing was my training. You know, that's how I became better at finishing the 100s, because I did more of them. That's how I would finish a 50 miler, because I kept doing them. But like I said, if I had some kind of way of any extra time, maybe training for them, it wouldn't have taken me so long to not finish them, or, you know, get a better time, things like that, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so, and that's what I've learned now. Cause like now, if I get a DNF now, it's totally me. It would totally be on me. I'm physically, mentally trained enough to, it doesn't matter the distance. It really doesn't. And then like literally after the fact, I will do something like, okay, for example, hindsight, I did Oklahoma 135. Going into that race, I shouldn't have never signed up for the 135. But because I like challenges, I was like, okay, you can do this. You just push yourself to it. I should have signed up for the 100, because.
So which one was that? Was that Outlaw?
Yes, yes. Uh-huh. I don't do well in cold at all. Never happened.
Was that this year?
Yeah.
Was that this year?
It snowed. We had a massive snowstorm.
I was there.
Oh, see, I don't do the snow. I don't. I didn't have.
That was brutal. And well, and there was ice on,
On the trails and everything. Yeah.
Ice on the trails. Yeah.
Like that one big climb that we had to do, the downhill.
Oh yeah. The Devil's Butt Crack.
I slid down there the whole time, cause I couldn't. You know how you be trying to go to the side and shuffle your way down there? I kept falling. So I was like, and I was too scared I would fall all the way down. So I just like kind of grabbed onto the little branches that was on the side, and I just sat down on it and I slid down. That's the only way I could get down that hill. But I didn't have the right clothing, because I think it's a great race. I really do. But I was not prepared for it. You know what I'm saying? I should have had maybe either some kind of, I don't know if there's thicker sneakers for it or whatever, but I didn't have the right shoes to keep my feet warm. You know, I don't know if you get plastic bags or, I really don't know. I would have had to do more research on what I would need to have done to stay warm during that race. Because it's a race that can be finished. It's not difficult like that it can't be finished. I just didn't have the right supplies to stay out there the amount of time that it needed to finish that race. That's why I DNF'd that one.
You weren't the only one. That's unusual weather for Oklahoma, even in February. I mean, it was just.
Oh, okay. Because see, I thought that snowstorm was.
Yeah. No. Now I live in Kansas City, which is north of there.
Oh.
So we have that more often, but that's 300 miles south of here. So, and that's, I mean, that weather pattern went clear out into Texas. And so, I mean, and it was very unusual for it to be that cold that far south.
Okay.
I had paced someone there in 2020, and it was chilly. It was, you know, it was down in the 40s in the middle of the night. But the snow and ice, that's not usual for Oklahoma, even in February.
Okay.
But no, I was down there. I was supposed to pace somebody, and so I was down there in the cold as well.
Yeah, I mean, it got so bad. See, and what happened was, because of the snow, and maybe because my eyes are not trained to do the snow trail racing, I couldn't tell where. Once it snowed and ice, I couldn't tell what was thick ice to be able to step on and what wasn't. And what happened was I stepped on the ice and went straight down into one of the crossings. Now, because I knew we had the water crossing, but I did. Mm-hmm. I thought that ice was thick enough that I could cross over it. And it wasn't. I went all the way down. So by the time, and this was literally probably like 3 miles from the start finish. From mm-hmm. where I went into that water to those 3 miles, I lost it. I'm telling you, they had to put like warm bags in between my legs. They had to bags under my arms to kind of bring my temperature back. I'm trying to remember everything the little ranger lady was saying, but basically my body was in trouble because I had got wet mm-hmm. and stayed out there that long. But all I kept remembering was get back. That's all I could remember was get back. And so, like I said, it wasn't the fact that the race, I didn't DNF because of the race. I DNF because I didn't have the right supplies for that race. Right. Now, if I had the clothing to be warm, if I had, I just needed everything to be warm. That's all I needed. Because the beginning part of the race was fine. But once it started snowing and the temperature dropped below, you know, like the freezing level or whatever.
It was 6 degrees out there.
Oh, I mean, my God.
It was like six degrees above zero. it was not just freezing. It was dangerously cold.
See, I'm glad I didn't know that. Didn't know that.
I'm telling you this 4 months later. you were in a dangerous situation there.
I'm telling you, I'm 90 degrees. I love it. If it's 90 degrees, my racing give me 75 to 105. I'm good. I love that type of weather. I can race. I've always raced. The hotter it is, the better I race. I mean, I know everybody's like, "Ooh, it's too hot." I'd be like, "Yes, bring it on." But when it's cold,
we'll try it again. I don't know.
Yeah. I just can't do cold. I'm determined to mentally overcome that. Like I said, as long as I know what supplies to take, because I'm going back to that race next year, and I'm gonna make sure that if they say have these kind of shoes, those are the shoes I'm gonna have. If they have like lately. I don't even know if you noticed, I have bought me a snowsuit and I've been racing in my snowsuit. And I know some people are like, it's not cold enough, but for me, I need my snowsuit. That keeps me warm. Cause even in Vermont, I put on my snowsuit and it kept me warm during the evening time, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And for me, if my legs and my knees are warm, I can run. But once they get cold and lock up, it's a wrap. Cause then it's too painful to run. You know, and I'm not a big component on keep taking ibuprofen. No, I want my kidneys, I can't do that. I actually want to, I don't mind the suffering, but I still want to enjoy the race. Do you see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I do. I know that it's tough. I get that part. I don't mind that, but I want to enjoy my race. When it gets to the point that everything is just so bad that, I need you to give me this. I need you to give me that. I'm not enjoying my race anymore.
Right. Well, and if there's things that you can do to take care of your body.
Right.
I mean, that's as simple as, so what if you're the only person out there wearing a snowsuit? I mean, if that's what you need for your body, then do that.
Right.
I mean, it's, that's just a smart way to plan. But yeah, definitely go back to, be prepared. If you go back to Outlaw, when you go back to Outlaw next February, you know, be prepared for a variety, because it can be, I mean, like those snow conditions and that cold was unusual.
But is it normally like 6 degrees? I mean, like what's
the
normal temperature?
The winter before, I was pacing somebody, and I was out all night, and it was 40 degrees, maybe in the mid 30s. So it wasn't freezing, and so it was cold enough, and there were places where the course was wet, so my feet got a little bit wet, but it was not. I mean, even at that,
And see, and that's the thing. I had on some ultras that drain really well. So even mm-hmm. every time my feet got wet, and I had on two pairs of compression socks. And another thing with my compression socks, I wear them like halfway through the race, and then I have to like roll them down because it seemed like it's just too tight on my legs. I have to let them mm-hmm. breathe. But because my ultras drained so well, my feet were dry. But
right.
When it got to the point that it was snowing, they stayed cold. You know what I mean? Right. Though they got dry, they still were cold. You know, I needed
six degrees
socks or something. I know, you know what I mean? I know I needed something else, or maybe I needed heating pads in my socks. I don't know what I could have did to keep my feet warm, but I know it's stuff out there to keep your feet warm, you know.
For wintertime especially, you know, if it's down in those temperatures, wool socks will provide heat, will keep you warm even if they are wet.
Okay.
And so that's the thing. And wool, the same thing with wool clothing. If the wool clothing gets wet, it still provides insulation.
Okay.
And my daughter, we had a race here, my daughter ran, it was going to be sloppy wet, but cold. And I told her, says, yeah, wear wool socks, because it'll keep your feet wet, feet warm, even in the slush.
Okay. See, that's what I'm saying. It's just, I don't believe there are bad races. It's bad preparation, you know?
Yeah, that's right. Well, and if you don't know, I mean, if you've never experienced it before, I mean, it's easy to, I mean, and for, you know, for each race, there are things that, I mean, we try to prepare as best you can. I mean, that's what ultra marathon is. You prepare, but then you also, yeah, there are things that are going to happen you didn't foresee, and it's the ability to kind of adapt and overcome. That's the real skill for ultra marathon running.
Right.
And a lot of that comes from mindset. I mean, you have that, you know, you were talking about your mindset of, you know, staying in the moment, being not worrying about the future. And just, you know, running where you're at now, and running, you know, just breaking it up into small sections, you know, that's the same kind of thing. You have to plan ahead, but, you know, but that flexibility of like, oh, okay, I need to do something different here.
That's why I tell people, don't worry so much about the DNFs, especially if it's a race that you haven't done, because what people don't understand, a DNF does not always mean that you couldn't do the distance. It's a lot of variables. That's what I tell people. I said, in 30 hours, do you know how many things can happen in 30 hours? We're not talking about 2 hours. We're not. So, like, I remember one woman, she was telling me, she was like, I've finished all my marathons. Okay, yes, 4 hours and 36 hours. I believe less things are going to go wrong in four than it could in 36 or 30 hours. I was like, and even in 4 hours, do you know how many things that can go wrong in a marathon? Mm-hmm. I said, so you're not getting the concept. I said, it's not that. I said, and the reason people keep trying ultra marathons and going after is conquering something more than just the mileage. You conquer a lot more than just that mileage out there. You really do. You conquer problem solving, because you can be so prepared and still something goes wrong. You know, like for example, my last race, I had brand new batteries out of the pack. When he went, the guy at the aid station went to open my pack of batteries, they were all rotten. How was I supposed to know that? You see what I'm saying? Those are brand new batteries out the store. But apparently they probably have been sitting on the shelf, you know, or got wet or whatever, but they were all no good. So, but fortunately for me, I over prepare, and people be laughing at me because I always be having like 2 and 3 headlamps on. So even though we didn't have batteries for that, I had 2 extra headlamps, so I still was okay, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's just, it's a lot of things that can happen that can make you not finish your race. And it has nothing to do with, well, a lot of times it has nothing to do with you couldn't do the mileage, you know? Mm-hmm. And I don't like when people try to make people feel bad about, oh, you didn't complete that mileage. No, you don't know what happened. They could, you know, their stomach could have been so upset that they couldn't get it under control. So they couldn't get any nutrition down, and you have to eat. There's no way you can do these races without, you know, you can't just gel throughout the whole race. Eventually you're going to have to get some type of nutrition in you, you know? It's just a lot of things, a lot of things. And I really, that's one of my pet peeves is when people try to make people feel bad about a DNF. That I'm like, nope. Mm-mm. I said, when they have the courage to go attack that DNF again, to me, that's a stronger runner. That's a stronger runner because they're not afraid. Versus you have some runners who, oh, I'm not going to make my goal time, so they'll just stop. No, I like the person that's going to keep going. Because that's the person that if something happens to me, they're going to come out there and get me. You know, versus the one to say, oh, this is not going to happen in 2 hours. I'm not going. I want the person that's so strong that they're willing to go through everything to come and get me and help me. So, no. Mm-mm. Yeah, DNF, whatever.
Yeah. Well, and for ultra runners, especially if you don't have if you don't have the possibility of a DNF, it's not really a challenge, you know? And so, you know, a lot of people, you know, if you set an easy goal and make it, you can kind of feel good about yourself.
Right.
But if there's a real chance that you're going to fail, you know, and you have to overcome and push yourself through and have that, you know, that real possibility that, you know, I'm not going to make it. And sometimes you don't. I mean, that is the real reward for those of us who run ultra marathons.
That's true. Like, that's true.
We're doing something that is good. It takes everything you got. And even at that, it's not guaranteed.
It's definitely not guaranteed. And you know, even when you run 100, and even to me, 50 miles, and no, I'm not even going to say 50 miles. It depends on the person, because a 50K for somebody who always runs a half marathon, that's an accomplishment. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So, but if you're not used to doing 50Ks all the time, something can go wrong in a 50K. You know?
Oh, yeah.
Something can go wrong in a 50. Something can go wrong in a marathon. So you can't say that just because you've done 30 of them, that you know the formula to finishing every single one. You don't. The more you do them, especially as we age, it's a lot of different factors that can make you not finish that race or not meet your goal time or, you know, but it has to be something more than that. You know, because I don't run for the bling. I just started saving my buckles. I tell no lie. I just started saving my buckles. I got so many races and I have probably like 20 buckles. Just started saving them. I would donate them. Kids would play with them. You know, the kids would take them to school. My mommy did this, leave them at school. I would not pick them up from the race directors. I would leave them here because it wasn't about that. You know what I'm saying? It was about finishing that race. It was about, I survived those 50 miles. I survived. I got to mile 89. You don't even know what it took for me to get to mile 89. You know, so I would celebrate things like that. It wasn't so much the shirts. I mean, I know a lot of race directors, they like, she ain't even pick up her shirt. She ain't even pick up her packet. I don't. I mean, because at the time, in the beginning, I was coming in on 2 wheels, give me my number and I'm gone. You know what I'm saying? Pick up that packet, pick up. You know, they'd be like, get after the race. After the race, I'm getting in my car to get home. You know, so I can't even, it's not about that for me. It really was always about meeting that challenge, you know, like, okay, you can do this. You got some more in you, you know? It's always been about the challenge for me. It always has. I mean, and for whatever reason, if I finish it on the first go round, alhamdulillah, great. But if I don't, it just gives me something else that I know I got to do next year, you know, something to work hard for. So it's, I don't take it that serious. You know, some people will be really bummed out. It's all good. You know, it's not. Going to see my kids is not going to keep me from getting to my whipped cream and my cotton candy. So I'm good. I'm good. I don't care.
So how did you decide to go after the world record?
Well, that was my sister's idea. My sister was like, why don't you do something with all these races? You just be running all these races. Why don't you do something with them? I was like, I just like doing them. She was like, okay, what's the most races somebody has ever ran? I was like, I don't know. Let's go to Mr. Google and find out. We did. We Googled it. And she's like, why don't you do that? And then I was like, you know what? That's the plan. I'm going to do that. And I'm going to do 100 push-ups at the end of every race. She said, now you're doing too much. You always trying to do too much. Okay, I'll just finish all the races. But that was the original conversation. After every race, got to do 100 push-ups to boom, solidify it. She was like, you're doing too much. You're doing too much. I do. When I get home, though, I do try to do my push-ups. I admit, I have not been successful with 100 on after each race.
I was going to say, after running, I mean, yeah, especially after running that many, as many as you're doing, like that would take a lot.
But I will say that it's taught me that I need I have to have 30 to 48 hours, nothing. And then I can run again. I mean, like literally, and I know people have their run streaks and things like that, but for me to finish these, I can't. Mm-mm. And I also noticed like during the week, if I do 5 miles, I'm good. Seriously, my racing has become my training because they're like, so, you know, back to back. I think if I was running during the week and trying to run on the weekends, I would be burnt out.
Well, especially running ultra marathons.
Yeah, it would be too much. At least for me. I'm not saying I hate generalizing what's too much for me. You know, that might be the perfect thing for somebody else, but for me, that's a lot.
Yeah, and for a lot of people, they would look at what you're doing and say, that's crazy.
Yeah. Well, you know, and you know, here's the thing. And I have learned, and that's just through talking to my mom and dad, which they are like my rock. They are so great. A lot of people I've noticed, and I had no clue. I really had no clue. I thought this would be something that people like, yeah, let's do this. They'll get behind her. I've lost quite a few. Now I can call them acquaintances based on, it seemed like each race that I finished, the more they're not supporting me. And I don't understand that. I'm getting more of, well, why are you trying to show out? Or why do you have to say that, you know, you're driving? And I get so many inboxes. I posted one of my inbox messages one time, but I had another guy just kind of go all in on me saying I was glorifying my DNF, and I wasn't. I was glorifying the fact that I got as far as I did and didn't quit. That's what I was trying to relay, telling people, you know, don't quit. Like I tell people, I don't quit. You're going to pull me off that course. I may not make the cutoff, but I'm not going to just say, okay, I can't do it. I don't do that. I keep pushing. And that's all I try to show people is just push. So he was mad about that. And I was like,
this is somebody you don't even know.
And I mean, he just kept every paragraph. So then like my dad told me, he said, you have to realize a lot of times you're doing something that somebody may want to do, but for fear they're not doing it. And the more that you do it, it kind of makes them look at themselves and say, why am I not even trying? And I said, well, but I'm not like that. I think I'm not like that because I was a bad little girl. I can honestly say that I was like the little terror because I was so tiny. So my thing was, I'm gonna get you before you get me. So I was like a bully. I really was. I was a bully before I even knew I was a bully. But I was a bully because I was a mean little girl. And we're talking about second grade, third grade mean, you know? And that's what I'm saying. I was mean before I even knew what it was. And so now, as an adult, I can't take people being mean. I don't like that at all. I will do everything in my power to be nice to you, to just suck it up, let you say whatever, because there's no reason for it. There's no reason for it. You know, mine came from me being so little. So I really was scared of you. That's why I was mean to you. I was scared. And I would basically try to make sure that you were scared of me. And didn't know I didn't want you to know I was really scared of you. So I would be mean to all the kids in my class. And like I said, as an adult, I know that now. So I kind of shrug off people when they're just mean for no reason. When I'm like, I know I didn't do anything to you. I know what I'm doing is not affecting your day whatsoever. So I'm shrugging off, you know, all that energy. I'm not even feeding into it at all, you know? And I do, I get it, but I don't get it. You see what I'm saying? I don't get it. Cause like people get upset, like, wow, you are always late to the race. But how me starting the race late affected your race? When you were 10 miles ahead of me, how did you even know I was late? You know what I mean? You wouldn't know I was late. I posted that I got there late, or either until I caught up to you or whatever, but me being late to my race should not make you mad, but it does. It really irks a lot of people. And I'm like, it would be different if I just showed up. I never just show up out. When I'm driving, I'm emailing the race. Look, I cannot keep my eyes open any longer. I need to pull over. Is it okay if I start, you know, can I come to the race late? And if they say no, okay, great. Thank you. I'm going back home. And I've had some race directors say that, and I have no problem with it because that's your race. You can handle it any way you want. I've had race directors tell me, hey, no late starts. You got to be here on time. If I can get there on time, I'm getting there. If I can't, no big deal either. You see what I'm saying? I'm one of those people, I don't get mad about your rules because those are your rules. But if somebody says, yeah, Cheryl, come on. You come on late. I don't care. You know the clock already start. I get that. You probably gonna DNF. I get that. That's on me. So I never get why people get so upset about it, but a lot of people do. And I'm like, if I can not work and just be there, I would. But I got responsibilities. The racing is my extra. I don't have money just set aside for racing. I have to work for that. And I cannot take money out of my household for my racing. You know, not justifying why I'm late. I'm just telling you my reality. You know, it's not. I mean, it, like they say, it is what it is. It's not, you know, I don't know any other plainer way of saying it, but it's, I work literally up until the last minute. And then it's like, okay, I got to go, you know? So, and those were all my choices. I could easily have picked a higher paying job, but then I wouldn't be able to just walk off the job anytime I wanted to and go to see my kids. You know, that's why I chose little, and I don't even want to say they crappy jobs because then that might offend somebody, but I chose jobs that I can leave when I want to. It's not a big deal. You know what I mean? Because then that way, if my kids say, mommy, I forgot my socks. All right, I got to go. I got to take my son his socks. He didn't put his socks on, you know, but when I was working in corporate America, at the television station, I couldn't just walk off and be like, okay, I can't run this teleprompter. I got to go. So those are choices I made in my life to attend to my kids. So, and I don't have a problem with my choice. I'm good. I'm good with my choices. And like I said, the races I can get to, I happily run them. Races I can't get to, I happily just look at them and keep them on my list. And like now that the kids are getting older and I don't have as many responsibilities, I'm going after races that I haven't been able to do based on my schedule. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So now I can do races that you can't start late, or now I can do races that are, you know, 20 hour drive away because I have the time, you know, that my daughter can stay there and watch the younger kids while I'm away, you know? So it's different things, you know? And it's,
so before, did you take your kids to the races with you?
All the time. All the time. Me and my five, we rolled up. That's, I know people remember when my kids were little, they were always in the car with me to the races. Cause I mean, what I'm gonna do? I couldn't leave them at home. So they would go with me. Right. Yeah. So In the beginning, it was like a little family trip. But as they started getting older, it's like, Mom, we don't want to go. We ain't going to your races. Well, I want to do that. You know, I'd be like, okay, we're going to go to a hotel. You can swim in the pool. You know, I would have to try to sell it. And if that worked for a little while, you know, the pool and all this and that. And it was like, no, we're not going. You know? But like now that they're older, especially the older ones, they'd be like, you got a race. Okay, good luck, Mom. Have fun.
Did you train them to be your support crew? Did you train them to be your support crew?
I tried, but they would be asleep. You know, they would be asleep. I go be like, okay, where's my drink? Where's my sock? It's over there. You know, they sleep in the car. So it was like, no, that wasn't working. Mm-mm. No. And they did like running for a while. But I think because at such a young age, they got so much of it. They made it, it was like, I don't want to do it. You know what I mean? And they're such good runners, but it's just not what they want to do. The only one who halfway runs is the 15-year-old in a
So how many races have you run this year so far?
I'm on number 27, six. This Saturday is 26 or 26. I would have to look at my book, but I think this weekend is 26 and 27, or either 27 and 28, one or two. Cause I just did one in, where was I? In Ohio. So, and I think Ohio was
okay.
26. So yeah, but by the time I finish, the end of this year, it'll be 61. It'll be 61 races. And that's
okay.
That's tentative if everything goes the way that I plan it to go. Because I had 65 and I have four. I have had four that I haven't finished. So they don't count those.
Okay. They don't count the ones that we didn't finish.
And then one was actually not long enough. They have to be 30, you know, a 50K is what, 31.525. One of them, when they measured the course, it was only 30 miles, 30 point like 86. So it's not going to count. It's not going to count. As I told the race director, I said, nope, it's not going to count. So he's going to send a letter in, but I know it's not going to count. So yeah, I got a couple of that. Right, yeah, right. It is what it is.
That's, you know, we kind of deal with that in ultra marathons is, you know, the mileage isn't necessarily, you know, exact.
Mm-hmm. But that's why.
And a lot of times it's more.
Yeah, a lot of times it is more. But that's why I'm making sure that going forward, when that happened, going forward, I'm trying to go for longer distances so that way I don't even have to worry. So if I do a 50 mile, I know I did the 50K, you know, because technically right, that's right. All I need to do is 50K, but I don't want that to happen anymore. Cause I was like, what? You know, cause that's only like a half a mile short, but it is what it is, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they put it, they advertise as an ultramarathon,
right.
You know, as a 50K.
Right.
And for most race directors, if you're close, most ultra runners are like, oh yeah, you know, it was a 50K.
Right. It was a 50K. Exactly. But like I said, when you're going for a record, they certify everything. They check everything. You have to have the race director sending a letter saying, yes, that was actually her. She showed up. She ran these miles. I mean, it's a lot involved. I don't even think people understand how much is involved in that. It's not like you just say, oh, I ran these races and yeah, they believe you. No, you have to show pictures. Cause even some people be like, why are you taking out? Well, now I have to take, you got to show pictures that you were there at the race. You have to do some kind of video at the race. And I even believe, I'll have to check the email, but they have to have a witness too. Like I have to have a witness. That's another reason you see me taking pictures with different people. So to show that, you know, I was there with such and such, I was there with, you know, and I get everybody's name. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and I get it. Cause a lot of people will falsify information. Unfortunately. So now they're real strict about making sure that if you say you went there, you got to prove you went there. If mm-hmm. you said you ran these miles and they don't just mm-hmm. go by a buckle, you got to show online that you did 100 miles. You got to mm-hmm. show online. Mm-hmm. And basically, even if I did 100 miles, they're not counting that. They count that anything over the 50K.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. So even if it was 100 miles, they don't care about that. They just want to make sure, okay, it was over 50K, check, she did it. Over 50K, she did it. You know, that's what they're looking for. They mm-hmm. don't care about the time. They don't care about the placing. They just care that you completed that distance.
Right, right. And, you know, so if you run 100 mile and have a DNF, do they still count that as being?
Nope, because I didn't complete the race.
So you've got to complete the race distance you sign up for.
And see, what I did, the reason I added so many longer distances is because it wouldn't have been a challenge for me. I know that sounds crazy, but I can run a whole bunch of 50Ks. I know I can. But can I run a whole bunch of 50Ks, a whole bunch of 50 milers, a whole bunch of 100 milers? That's where the challenge came in. So that's why I had to do my schedule that way. Mm-hmm. I had to. Now, I really wanted to do a whole bunch of 100 milers, but it is what it is. Financially, I couldn't do
The longer the distance, the more it costs.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, people are like, well, why you didn't go out to the 100-mile record? Because it costs a lot of money. That's why. So, yeah, that's why I couldn't do that. But I mixed in as many as I could. Because, like I said, I knew just going after 50Ks would not have been a challenge for me, you know, because that's training. That's, you know, I run 50 miles a week. So, to say, okay, you only gonna run a 50K every weekend, that's what you train for anyway, Jamila. That's not a challenge, you know? Mm-hmm. So I would have felt like I got a certificate for doing something that I did not earn. But run a whole bunch of 100 milers back to back. Like, for example, in September, I know coming up, because I don't know my schedule exactly, but I know coming up, I have like 600 milers back to back.
Okay.
And they're not easy. They 100 milers, that's gonna have me like, what a blah blah blah.
So okay, I'm trying to do the math here. September, 30 days in September in six. So you're gonna have some, like you're gonna do 100 milers back to back.
Yeah.
I mean, like not, I mean, you say
like
back, it would be like one a weekend.
Like it's a cause some of them are during the week. So like for real, it's about to be stupid. My schedule's about to
so
be
you do
like,
one
oh,
of, you'll do
I'm
one,
like, I'm sorry to get you to post this, guys, but.
So you do one on a weekend and one in the middle of the week. And then
next week. Yeah. Cause next week I have, it's not this weekend I have, and I don't like to say easy, but this weekend I have 250Ks. But the elevation on those is gonna be like, you know, they're hard elevation races. But the following week I do 6 days in the dome back up with 2 24-hour races. So that's 8 straight days. That's gonna be tough. And then the following week I have a tough 50K because the speed go, and that's a tough one. So pretty much from this point forward, everything before was the warm up schedule. This is about to be.
So on a 24 hour race.
This is about to
race,
show if, okay, if you're going to do this. Well, so the 24 hour race, I'm going to, the 24 hour, my goal was only 50 miles because I know what I got following it. You know, like I said, I don't like doing the 30 anymore because I don't want to fall short. So it got to be 50 miles. Got to be 50. That way I know for a fact, and I could do 50 miles in 24 hours.
Okay. So in a 24 hour race, you don't have, I mean, you run the, I mean, that the Guinness World, you know, Guinness people would count that as long as you ran over the mileage.
Right. Yep. So, yep. And that's another thing. They don't care about the terrain. It's just, like I said, it's the distance. You have to, the distance has to be correct. They don't care what type of race it is, you know. And another thing, I can't just say I ran a race. It has to be 10 participants in the race.
Okay.
Excuse me. So let's say, for example, I couldn't just say, okay, I'm putting on a race for myself. That you can't do that.
Okay.
Or you can't just say I'm running 5 races this week and you're the only person in the race. They're not going to count that either. They have to be actual races, you know, with 10 participants. It could be a brand new race, but it has to have 10 participants in order for it to count.
Okay. Well, that's cool. Well, I appreciate this. We've about an hour's time.
I know. I know. I'm so sorry. I will run my mouth.
Well, no. I try to keep it to an hour. It's like I could keep on talking to you for a lot longer. like the people who listen to the show kind of expect it to be about an hour.
Well, good. I'm glad we didn't disappoint them.
Yeah. And I've enjoyed the conversation. I've enjoyed listening to your stories. And at the end of the year, may call you back and just, let's have another conversation.
Okay.
And see how the year went, you know, and whether you make the record or not. I think what you've said, is so important is that the taking on the challenge is the important part.
It's the challenge. Yes.
And that is, and that's the kind of, I think like that's the people I look for, you know, hopefully are looking at listening to this, show is people who enjoy, you know, how far can I go? And, you know, what is my limit?
What's my limit?
Yeah. And you won't know your limits until you push to, you know, the possibility of failure. That's true.
And that's, I think as runners, that's what we ultimately are looking for. What really is my push. And then I think even when we find it, we still say, let me figure out how I can go further than that, you know?
Yeah. And I have friends who look at and say, I will never run 100 miles. I'm like, that's fine. I tell people, run the distance that makes you happy. You know,
makes you happy. Exactly.
And so for a lot of us as ultra runners, you know, that happiness comes from, you know, testing our limits. And, you know, others are fine with, you know, doing a marathon and seeing improvements. And there's,
cause you don't, for, to me, a 5K hurts.
Yeah.
I'm the one that's going to say, okay, I'm not doing that 5K. No. I'll walk you with my kids, but those hurt. Yeah. You got to run fast. I can't. Yeah.
I agree. I'd rather have a long, slow distance than trying to.
Yeah, me too.
So I will look forward to, where can people find you on, if they want to follow you along on your journey?
I posted on Facebook, under my Facebook page, which is under my name, Jamila Abdulrahim Mujahid. And then I try to post in Trail and Ultra, but I try not to overpost. I don't want to be one of those people. So I'll do like every three races.
Okay.
I'll post one of them. I try to let some time go by before I post in there. And then I also post in, it's called American Trail Runner, or either East Coast Trail Runner. It's all the trail running sites. I post in them. I just don't post every single race. I post like every third race. So it's like, I try to at least let 3 weeks go by before I post. But okay. Yeah, there, if you're following the trail racing scene, you'll see a post from me. You really will. I might say, okay, I'm on race number 36. So you'll know how many I've done before that.
Okay. Because I think I'm part of the trail and ultra runner group. And I think that's where I saw your post there. And I was like, well, that's kind of you posted about going for the world record. And I was like, well, that sounds like she would have some interesting stories. And so that's when I
got
to say.
Yes.
So, but I will, on the show notes for this, I'll have your Facebook information, Facebook contact.
Okay. Excellent. I appreciate that.
Yeah. And I best of luck to you. And just, I'll be following you and just keeping, cheering.
Thank
you
so much, Eric.
Yeah. I appreciate it. And thanks for taking time to talk with us.
Oh, no problem. You have a good rest of your day. Okay.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Bye-bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as @UltramarathonMindset, or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life. And developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.